वंशिकपितृभ्यश्च कृपसिन्धुभ्यैव च पतितनां भवनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः। In the fourth canto, quite a long time ago, we heard about Prithu Maharaj. And in Prithu Maharaj, the entire system, more or less in the Vedic system, was discussed. And the Vedic system, the Vedic culture, is meant to bring one to the point of God realization, Krishna consciousness, self-realization. Human life is meant for this. So the Vedic civilization directed one towards self-realization, regardless of one, if one was taking the path of karma, karma kanda, karma yoga, or jnana yoga, still more advanced, or astanga yoga, and ultimately bhakti yoga. The goal ultimately is bhakti. So we have two things going on in the current chapter that we're in now, because the pastime of Prithu Maharaj has been completed. One is a story, a pastime, a further pastime of the generations following Prithu Maharaj is continued. And the other thing that's going on is we're going to hear some prayers by Lord Shiva, because generally in the culture, in the Vedic culture, or even amongst Hindus today, there are so many worshippers of Lord Shiva. And most of those worshippers of Lord Shiva are impersonalists. That means they are not truly worshippers of Lord Shiva. Why? Because they're worshipping Lord Shiva and using him, considering him, thinking of him as a vehicle, a means towards another end. So there's a difference between the means and the end in their case. The means may be Lord Shiva and one worships Lord Shiva, but the end is the form of Lord Shiva will dissolve. Actually, Lord Shiva is the predominating deity of the false ego. So they want to dissolve, by the mercy of Lord Shiva, the false ego, but the impersonalists think then, when one's false ego is dissolved by the mercy of Lord Shiva, then everything will dissolve, and one will understand the great spiritual basis of everything, and that there is nothing more than that. Tattvamasi, you are that, that great oneness. So that is what the impersonalists tend to believe. But now we will hear something different. Oh, we've heard a lot of it already. That something different is what Lord Shiva's opinion is. Because the worshippers of Lord Shiva should naturally follow the opinion of Lord Shiva. Of course, there are different Puranas. There are Tamasic Puranas, there are six of those, including the Shiva Purana. And then there's the Rajasic, or the Puranas that are meant for those in the mode of passion. And then there are the Puranas, or the Vedic literature, is meant for those in the mode of goodness. And the Bhagavad Purana, in some lists of the Puranas, is considered beyond Srimad Bhagavatam Pramanam Mamalam. It is the spotless Purana. It is the highest Praman. It is beyond all the other. Praman means what?
Evidence
or proof. This is the highest citation that one can give. In other words, if it gives the highest conclusion, if there is an argument between someone in the first grade, talking about mathematics, and someone who is a university professor talking at mathematics, whose statements will we consider more authoritative? Not that the first grade mathematics student, he may not be wrong in what he's saying on a particular level. He may not be wrong, but the higher students or the higher professors, their correctness is still more correct because their correctness brings a more complete understanding. So, the Bhagavad Gita, even though in some shastra, it even describes that Lord Shiva is the supreme. Because the followers of Lord Shiva need to have strong faith in Lord Shiva, otherwise they won't follow. And then the result of not following anything is disastrous. So the Vedic system gives people faith on all the different levels. Just imagine if the university professor walked into the first grade class and started explaining how, truly speaking, 1 plus 1, he used some algebraic or higher formula or some quantum something or other to explain that somehow or another 1 and 1 isn't 2 or something. So maybe you can explain things like this through higher math. In some sense it's not true, but just imagine what confusion that would cause to the first grader. The first grader needs that concept, whatever that one is, the basic concept, to even go beyond that concept. So similarly, those who are infected by tamagun, the mode of ignorance, they need faith in this particular type of worship. For instance, the worship of Lord Shiva, for the purpose of advancing further. So the further advancement, the process of further advancement, is given not in the tamasic or rajasic puranas, but it is given in the sattvika puranas or the amalam praman, amala puran, the Bhagavatam. And Lord Shiva himself is going to be speaking here. So that's on one level. We're going to hear the prayers of Lord Shiva, this is how Lord Shiva prays, although he didn't make up that prayer. And on the other level is the story of the pastime that is taking place, how the descendant of Prithu Maharaj was named Antardhan. If we remember way back, Antardhan had recognized Indra taking away the horse from the horse sacrifice, the 100th horse sacrifice. And after Prithu Maharaj left this world, departed for Goloka Vrindavan, Antardhan became the king. And he was very powerful. And when he left this world, his son Havirdhan became king. And Havirdhan had a son whose name was Barhi, or in this story he's called Prachini Barhi, or Prachini Barhishad. Now the pastimes of Prachini Barhishad and his sons were called the Prachetas. He had 10 sons and they had a group known as the Prachetas. So what is going on with Prachini Barhishad and how he finally becomes liberated and how the Prachetas become liberated, this takes up the remainder of the fourth canto of the Bhagavad Gita. So, Prachini Barhishad was a great performer of ritualistic karmakandic activities. So there's a tendency for one, and those are, they are Vedic activities, but they are in the mode of passion. They are meant to establish or direct someone who has desires, material desires, towards the Vedas to get their material desires fulfilled. So there's a tendency, of course, there is a danger, of course, just like when one is in the first grade and he has mastered the performance of 1 and 1 is 2, and not only that, he knows 2 plus 3 is Stumped you on that one, huh? Okay. So he's mastered the basic addition, and he's so satisfied with that, he doesn't want to move on to the second grade, which is speak of the third, fourth, or fifth. But yet he has to be moved on. So Narada Muni went to Pachini Barishat, and we'll hear this later. And Pachini Barishat was very expert in performing the fruit of karmakandic activities. And Maharaj and Narada Muni is going to tell him it's time to move on. Now, how do you get someone to move on? Because this moving on is a moving on not as much in activities as in consciousness. This is the art of teaching, the art of preaching. To get someone inspired to want to move on. So Narada Muni is going to do that. Now the Pachetas, who were the sons of King Pachini Barishat, they were instructed by the king to marry, have children, etc. And before they did this, they wanted to perform austerities and make their consciousness pure and fixed in the Supreme. So on their way to the place they were going to perform their austerities, they came to a great reservoir of water that is described very sweetly and beautifully as a vast bay that was very peaceful with fragrant lotus flowers, etc. And when they were there, they suddenly heard the sounds of kettle drums and musical instruments. And lo and behold, Lord Shiva came out of the water there. And Lord Shiva was very pleased with the Pachetas. Why? Because they were very sadhava, they were very obedient and well-behaved, and because they were great devotees of Lord Vishnu, he was pleased. So, due to his pleasure, he decided to instruct them by reciting a prayer to them, because they were going to perform austerities and engage in meditation. And he gave them a very, very powerful prayer that would focus their meditation. And that is the song sung by Lord Shiva. Now the verses of this, what Lord Shiva explains is, they begin in text 33 of the 24th chapter. And from 33 to 43, Lord Shiva offers obeisances, simply offers obeisances. He offers obeisances unto first the Chaturvyuha, because from the Chaturvyuha, who is Vasudev, Shankarshan, Aniruddha, and Prajumna and Aniruddha, these are the expansions of Lord Balaram, who is the prime expansion of Lord Krishna. And through these four expansions of the Lord, and they are all the Lord, but with different functions, they all have to do with, they supervise in a transcendental way activities of the material world. For example, Lord Vasudev is the all-pervading super soul. Vasudeva Savamiti Samahabmasudolapa. And a rare person knows that. And Shankarshan, an expansion of Shankarshan, is the worshipable, is Lord Anantadev, and Shankarshan is the worshipable deity of Lord Shiva, and the predominating, the ultimate predominating deity over, therefore, the false ego. Aniruddha is the predominating deity over the mind, and Pradyumna has another function. So first, Lord Shiva, in these 11 verses, 33 to 43, he offers obeisances to Vasudev, who is the super soul, to Shankarshan, Aniruddha, Pradyumna. And then, in text 39, he offers his obeisances to the universal form which pervades everything in the material world. Or it is, or the material world is none different from this. And then he's offering us obeisances, and he's offering us obeisances to different aspects of Krishna. Because to approach the unknown, and for us, Krishna is quite unknown. We experience the material world, but we don't clearly experience Krishna. Not as clearly as we experience the material world. So to approach Krishna, it is very handy, practically speaking, it's essential to understand Krishna's predominance over the material world. And therefore, when we see the material world, we'll understand whose hand is guiding it. When we see the power, the unbreakable power that the false ego has over us, we'll understand how powerful that Lord is, who is the Lord of the false ego. It is by His potency that that false ego, for example, is being impressed upon us. So the entirety of the universal form, which some worship as the supreme, that is an aspect of Krishna. It is Kiradakshay Vishnu, an expansion of Govardakshay Vishnu, who is an expansion of Karanadakshay Vishnu, whose expansion... That was the alarm. To wake everyone up, anyone who's not fully awake. Who is an expansion of Mahavishnu, who is an expansion of Shankarshan, who is an expansion of Mahashankarshan, who is an expansion of Lord Balaram, who is an expansion of Krishna, Sarva Karna Karna. So if the material world and this material energy is so insurmountable and so varied and so powerful and so ununderstandable, despite the attempts of the scientists, it is quite ununderstandable. So if that material world is so amazing, just imagine the Lord of the ultimate Lord of that material world. So we're moving in that direction towards Krishna. And what Shiva is teaching the Vedas, and through teaching them, he's teaching us how we can move in the direction of deep devotion. And then in text 40, he explains that he is the Lord of piety, the goal of piety, because people perform pious activities, do good deeds daily, perform ritualistic activities to gain something. But what is the ultimate gain? Not some material fame or material pleasure or wealth or beauty or education or position. No. It's to that Lord whom Lord Shiva offers his obeisances, who is the ultimate goal of piety. And also in text 41, he describes, he offers obeisances to the Lord who is so multifaceted that he is not only the Lord of piety, but he's also the Lord of impiety. And what is the final thing that happens to an impious person? What is the final blow of impiety? Death. So he's the Lord of death. He awards the impious results of to people who act piously. So he's that Lord also, inescapable Lord. And he is the one who bestows all benedictions upon the living entities. And he is the supreme enjoy. He is the cause of all causes. And he is the supreme controller of egotism. This is in text 43, because Lord Shiva is saying this. That this Lord Shankarshan, is the controller. He is my controller. I am the Lord of egoism. I impress we cannot escape from this, the false ego. The false ego is the ahankar, that which ties us. It is the reflection of the soul's consciousness in matter, reflected by our desire to enjoy, and that is the knot that binds us tightly to the cycle of birth and death, and it is unbreakable, practically speaking. It is the hardest thing to break. Maya has tied it tightly and makes sure it remains tied. Mamevate papadyante maya metantarantite. Only Krishna can actually untie this. So this is the potency of Lord Shiva, and the one who gives him the potency is his worshipable deity, Lord Shankarshan. So that brings us up to text 43. Now, the Lord, who has all these different variegated potencies, who is he? So in 44 to 53, and we've heard all these verses previously, Lord Shiva describes that Lord. He wants to see that form, because Krishna has so many aspects. There are so many aspects of him. Again, he is multifaceted. He is death. He is piety. He is the universal form. He is Pradyumna. He is the all-pervading super soul Vasudeva. But what is the form that the devotees want to see him in? The devotees don't particularly desire to see him in the form of death or in the universal form. They want to see him in the beautiful form of Shyama Sunda or Krishna, or if they are devotees, Vaikuntha devotees, they want to see him in the form of Lord Narayan. They want to see that beauty. So in text 45 to 53, after describing the offering obeisances to the Lord and all his power, because naturally when you hear about the many facets of, and the power of the Lord, one thinks, well, who is he? And who is he? Part of who is he? We've heard what he does, but another part of who is he is what he looks like. Is he ghastly? When Arjuna saw the universal form, he was terrified and asked the Lord to withdraw it. No, so Lord Shiva is now zeroing in, and not zeroing in exactly, but coming to describe the form of the Lord that the devotees desire to see. And he is very, very beautiful. His smile, his glancing eyes, his face, his complexion, his beauty, his the Kastura gem upon his chest, his beautiful abdomen, the coils of his navel, the beauty of his lotus feet, and the effulgence of the nails of his lotus feet. So Lord Shiva describes that beauty. Okay, we've heard about the power of the Lord and some of his facets, of his aspects of his nature. Now we've heard about the Lord's beauty. That person who holds that position of Lord, so beautiful. Now, how to attain him? That's what we're going to hear about next. And this how to attain him, in one sense, this is the essence of the prayers of Lord Shiva. Bhavan bhakti mata labhyo dolabha savadehinam svarajyasya abhimata ekantenatma vidgati. My dear Lord, the king in charge of the heavenly kingdom is also desirous of obtaining the ultimate goal of life, devotional service, bhakti mata. Labhya bhakti mata. Obtaining bhakti. Who is desirous? There are so many people who are desiring to go to the place of the King of Heaven, Indradev, Indralok. Heavenly pleasures are there. But what is Indra desiring? He's desiring devotional service. You are the ultimate destination of those who identify themselves with you, Aham Brahmasmi. So the jnanis come to the point of understanding, clarifying their consciousness, so they can understand themselves as souls, as spirit. And they think, Aham Brahmasmi, I am that spirit, Tat Brahmasmi, I am that. They identify with that. So the karmis desire enjoyment on the planet of Indra, and the jnanis desire to merge with the great oneness of spirituality. But Indra himself wants devotional service to serve Krishna. And the ultimate goal of the jnanis is you are the ultimate destination of those who identify with you. So it's still Krishna. However, it is very difficult for them to attain you. Whereas a devotee can very easily attain your lordship. Tam duraradyam radhya satyam api durapaya ekanta bhakti kovanchet padamulam vinabahi. My dear Lord, pure devotional service is even difficult for liberated persons to discharge. But devotional service alone can satisfy you. Who will take to other processes of self-realization if he is actually serious about the perfection of life? Here's Prabhupada's purport. The word satam, padamulam vinabahi. The word satam refers to transcendentalists. There are three kinds of transcendentalists, jnanis, yogis, and the bhaktas. Out of these three, the bhakta is selected as the most suitable candidate to approach the Supreme Personality of Godhead. There is no other way to actually approach him. Bhaktyamam navidananti yavanyas chasmi tatvata. It is emphasized herein that only one who is outside of devotional service would not engage in searching for the lotus feet of the Lord. Foolish people sometimes maintain that God may be obtained in any way, either by karma yoga, jnana yoga, dhyana yoga, etc. But here it is clearly stated that it is impossible to obtain the mercy of the Lord by any means but bhakti yoga. The word duraradya is especially significant. It is very difficult to attain the lotus feet of the Lord by any method other than bhakti yoga. So these verses here glorify bhakti. That is the business of the devotees, the bhaktis. That is the methodology that the devotees use. And that is the only way to understand the personality of Godhead. So, what is the benefit of approaching the Lord through bhakti? Text 56. Simply by the expansion of his eyebrows, invincible time personified can immediately vanquish the entire universe. What does that mean? That in time, this universe, what to speak of this solar system, what to speak of the earth, what to speak of ourselves. In time, the entirety of everything in the material world is going to be crushed by time. Nothing in the material world survives the crushing of time. By the expansion, what is the implication of that? Simply by the expansion of his eyebrows, invincible time personified can immediately vanquish the entire universe. What is it say by expanding it? Because usually when we think of time crushing something, we don't think of invincible eyebrows. Excuse me, not invincible eyebrows, invincible time. The expansion of his eyebrows. But then again, His eyebrows sound pretty heavy, intense. Yes.
There's a verse about eyebrows of women captivating even great heroes. So in a sense, we're all bewildered here by attractive features here, which are all reflections of original attractive features.
Yeah, that's interesting. That wasn't the explanation I was thinking of, but it's a good one. It's creative. Yeah. Effortlessness, that's the word I was thinking. Yeah, thank you. Because, I mean, okay, everyone now, expand your eyebrows. Okay, okay. Yeah, very good, very good. Now, that wasn't very hard, was it? It's more or less effortless to expand your eyebrows. It's not like lifting up a car or something like that, or even running a mile, or anything. It's so easy. You can do it all day long, practically speaking, and it doesn't, I mean, not that I'm suggesting that we all start doing it all day long, but it's effortless. So effortlessly, this entire universe is destroyed by time as a matter of course. However, formidable time does not approach the devotee who has taken complete shelter at your lotus feet, Lord Shiva says. So the devotee is protected from the action of time. He's protected from destruction. Purport by Prabhupada. In the Bhagavad Gita 10:34, it is said that the Lord, in the shape and form of death, destroys all a person's possessions. Mrityu sarvaharas chaham. I am all devouring death. The Lord in the shape of death takes away everything that is created by the conditioned soul. Everything in this material world is subject to perish in due course of time. However, all the strength of time cannot hamper the activities of a devotee, for a devotee takes complete shelter under the lotus feet of the Lord. So think what this means. Does this mean that our feed bags will not get holes in them and our hair will not fall out? I will prove to you that this is not what it means, see? No, our bodies will also die, even for an exalted devotee. But there is something that the devotee does that Krishna completely protects him. He gives him complete shelter. Let's read further. All the strength of time cannot hamper the activities of a devotee, for a devotee takes complete shelter under the lotus feet of the Lord. For this reason only is a devotee free from formidable time. All the activities of the karmis, that means all the karma, and jnana even, and the jnanis, even merging in time, all the activities of the karmis and jnanis, which have no touch of devotional service, are spoiled in due course of time. The material success of the karmis is destined to be destroyed. Similarly, the impersonal realization attained by the jnanis is also destroyed in the course of time. Aruha kutstrena parampadam tata patyantyado anvita yuzmanam raya. To say nothing of the karmis, the jnanis undergo severe austerities to attain the impersonal brahmajyoti. But because they do not find the lotus feet of the Lord, they fall down again into material existence. Unless one is fully situated in unalloyed devotional service, there is no guarantee of liberation. Even if one is elevated to the heavenly planets or to the impersonal Brahman effulgence. A devotee's achievement, however, is never lost by the influence of time. Even if a devotee cannot completely execute devotional service, in his next life he begins from the point where he left off. Such an opportunity is not given to the Karmis and Gyanis whose achievements are destroyed. The Bhakti's achievement is never destroyed, for it goes on perpetually, be it complete or incomplete. That is the verdict of all Vedic literature. Suchinam shimatam gihe yoga prashta abhijayate. If one is unable to complete the process of bhakti yoga, he is given a chance in his next life to take birth in a pure family of devotees or in a rich family. In such families, a person can have a good opportunity to further progress in devotional service. When Yamaraj, the superintendent of death, was instructing his assistants, he told them not to approach the devotees. Quote, the devotees should be offered respect, he said, but do not go near them. So there's a difference between how death treats a devotee and how death treats a non-devotee, whether he is a completely perfect devotee or a not yet perfect devotee. That which a devotee has gained in his Krishna consciousness, that is never destroyed. That consciousness is maintained. Because a devotee, by definition, is one who always keeps himself under the shelter of the lotus feet of Krishna, be it in an immature way or a mature way, fully or partially. And that consciousness is protected until it reaches its perfection. That is one of the glories of devotional service. Do not go near the devotees. Offer them respect from a distance. Thus the devotees of the Lord are not under the jurisdiction of Yamaraj. Yamaraj is a representative of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he controls the death of every living entity. Yet he has nothing to do with the devotees. Simply by blinking his eyes, time personified can destroy the entire cosmic manifestation. But he has nothing to do with the devotee. In other words, devotional service, which is rendered by the devotee in this lifetime, can never be destroyed by time. Such spiritual assets remain unchanged, being beyond the influence of time. So therefore, devotional service, being the only thing that is beyond the influence of time and is not of the material world, that is why, how naturally we're understanding that it's very wonderful and unique. So how does one gain devotional service? How does one gain the ability to be a pure devotee? Where does that come from? How does one become a devotee? So text 57 describes this. If one by chance associates with a devotee, even for a fraction of a moment, he no longer is subject to attraction by the results of karma or jnana. What interest then can he have in the benedictions of the demigods who are the subjects who are subject to the laws of birth and death? Shana, half a moment. What's the verse in Chaitanya Charitamrita that explains this, that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has said? Lava matra sarasange sarva siddhihoi. That one will gain all perfection through association of a devotee. One gains that either consciously or unconsciously, and it is his eternal asset. From unconscious, that's called what? Agyata Sukriti. It comes to consciousness and then it develops and develops until it reaches the point of prema. And it will keep developing. Prabhupada explains in the purport. in this purport that although karma or materialistic fruitive activities or jnana merging peacefully into the great oneness, although they are so attractive to enjoy, enjoyment makes the world go run. Everyone is running after one type or another of sensual or mental enjoyment. Or that's the karma level or the jnani level of peace. For a devotee, he has no attraction for these things. A pure devotee has no attraction at all. And an aspiring devotee, a not yet pure devotee, has no attraction even though he may be attracted. That means by habit or material inclination coming from his body and mind due to previous karma, he may have habits that attract him, but that's not what he wants. He's not going to give his whole life to gain these things, to dedicate his existence to gain sense enjoyment or some position, or even the peace of Brahmananda. No. Because none of those things bring the satisfaction that the devotee has already realized. He has the seed planted in his heart. He has the faith planted in his heart. The taste planted in his heart. That what I want is on a different platform. It's in Goloka Vrindavan. And that, only that will fully satisfy me. Savai pungsan paro dhammo yatya bhakti ur hoksa jay ahai tukiya patiyata yayatma supasikati. So Prabhupada just ends his purport by saying, one can be fully satisfied simply by devotional service, and that is the result of association with the devotee. Without being blessed by a pure devotee, no one can be fully satisfied, nor can anyone understand the transcendental position of the Supreme Personality of God. Text 58. So after describing how the importance of devotional service, it gives one that thing that will not be taken away by death. What security is in that? Were we to realize that? Time will not steal it away. And how to get this wonderful thing through association, blessings, pure devotees, even a moment's association will start us on our way. And therefore, text 58 describes what Lord Shiva wants, and in one sense this is the central verse of the prayers of Lord Shiva. My dear Lord, your lotus feet are the cause of all auspicious things and the destroyer of all the contamination of sin. I therefore beg your lordship. So we want to attain the lotus feet of the Lord again. That means the service of the Lord. Therefore, naturally, what will Lord Shiva beg for? I therefore beg your lordship, because he wants the devotional service, I therefore beg your lordship to bless me with what? By the association of your devotees, who are completely purified by worshipping your lotus feet, and who are so merciful upon the conditioned souls. I think that your real benediction will be to allow me to associate with such devotees. Prabhupada's purport. The Ganges water is celebrated as being able to eradicate all kinds of sinful reactions. In other words, when a person takes his bath in the Ganges, he becomes free from all of life's contamination. The Ganges water is celebrated in this way because, what is the cause of the potency of the Ganges water? Because it emanates from the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of God. Similarly, those who are directly in touch with the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and who are absorbed in the chanting of His glories are free from all material contamination. Such unalloyed devotees are able to show mercy to the common conditioned soul. Srila Vrindavan Das Thakur has sung that the devotees of Lord Chaitanya are so powerful that each one of them can deliver a universe. In other words, it is the business of devotees to preach the glories of the Lord and deliver all conditioned souls to the platform of Shuddha Sattva, pure goodness. And how do the great devotees, deliver the conditioned souls to the platform of Shuddha Sattva, pure goodness? By giving them Shuddha Sattva, pure goodness. This is what the devotees carry in their hearts. And by their preaching, it is more or less just a matter of opening up their hearts. To one degree or another, opening up their hearts and allowing the purity, the bhakti, the Krishna consciousness in their hearts to go and touch the hearts of others through their preaching. Here the word susattva means sudhasattva, the transcendental stage beyond material goodness. By His exemplary prayers, Lord Shiva teaches us that our best course is to take shelter of Lord Vishnu and His Vaishnava devotees. And what is the result of this? Of this taking shelter? The devotee whose heart has been completely cleansed by the process of devotional service and who is favored by just like a dark well, and once one falls in the dark well of the material energy, one is lost. Did any of you ever fall in a dark well? I know someone who did. You did. In a dream. Okay. Awaken. Yeah, I know someone who was on Brajmandal Pikram and he got up early in the morning and was wandering around and he fell into a well and broke so many bones. But he's lucky because he could call out and he escaped. But if you fall into a deep dark well in the middle of a field with no one around, no one will hear you and you will be finished. So the external energy is like that, a deep dark well. So the devotee whose heart has been completely cleansed by the process of devotional service and it was favored by Bhakti Devi does not become bewildered by the external energy, which is just like a dark well. Being completely cleansed of all material contamination in this way, a devotee is able to understand very happily your, Krishna's name, fame, form, activities, etc. So that's the result, is a full understanding, full and happy understanding of Krishna, His name, His form, His activities, His qualities, etc. This is the last verse we'll read, and we'll read the purport, then the topic changes after this anyway. As stated in Srimad Bhagavatam 3.25.25, Satam Prasangam Mama Viryasam Vido Bhavanti Vidkana Rasayana Harkata Tajosanadasu Apavagavatmani Swadharati Bhakti Anukramishyati. Simply by the association of pure devotees, one can understand the transcendental name, fame, quality, and activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has repeatedly said, Sadhu Sangha Sarva Shastra Kai Lava Matra Sadhu Sangha Sarva Siddhi. Simply by associating with a pure devotee, one becomes wonderfully advanced in Krishna consciousness. Sadhu Sangha, or association with a devotee, means always engaging in Krishna consciousness by chanting the Hare Krishna mantra and by acting for Krishna. Specifically, chanting the Hare Krishna mantra purifies one. And this chanting is therefore recommended by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Cheto Darpana Marjanam. By chanting the names of Krishna, the mirror of the heart is cleansed, and the devotee loses interest in everything external. When one is influenced by the external energy of the Lord, his heart is impure. When one's heart is not pure, he cannot see how things are related to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Idam hi vishvam bhagavan ivatara. He whose heart is purified can see that the whole cosmic manifestation is but the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But he whose heart is contaminated sees things differently. Therefore, by satsanga, or association with devotees, one becomes perfectly pure in heart. One who is pure in heart is never attracted by the external energy which urges the individual soul to try to dominate material nature. The pure heart of a devotee is never disturbed when he executes devotional service in the form of hearing, chanting, remembering, etc. In all, there are 9 processes one can follow in the execution of devotional service. In any case, a pure-hearted devotee is never disturbed. What does that mean, that he's never disturbed? It means that the process continually goes on in his consciousness. He's always serving Krishna in one form or another by his own desire and by Krishna's divine grace. So therefore, a pure-hearted devotee is never disturbed. The bhakti yoga process must be carried out by avoiding the 10 offenses one can commit while chanting the Maha Mantra and the 64 offenses one can commit while worshipping the deity. When a devotee strictly follows the rules and regulations, Bhakti Devi becomes very much satisfied with him, and at that time he is never disturbed by anything external. A devotee is also called a Muni. The word Muni means thoughtful. A devotee is as thoughtful as a non-devotee is speculative. The non-devotee's speculation is impure, but a devotee's thoughts are pure. Lord Kapila and Sukadev Goswami are also called Muni, and Vyasadeva is addressed as Mahamuni. A devotee is addressed as Muni, or thoughtful, when he purely understands the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The conclusion is that when one's heart is purified by the association of devotees, and by the avoidance of the offenses committed while chanting and worshipping the Lord, the transcendental name, form, and activities of the Lord are revealed by the Lord. Okay, we'll stop here. There's no time for questions. Tomorrow is what day? Ram Nomi, which means appearance day of Lord Ramachandra, and there's a program tomorrow morning, night? Yes? Morning and night. Yes? There's a program. What time does the program begin tomorrow? 5? Yes. 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 Okay, so those who shall be here tomorrow, you shall see them to glorify Lord Ramachandra. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Lord Shiva ki jai, Pratyajas ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.